thank you for that caucus. This is our, I'm making four copies of our audit of Article 11. We have you, this is one for you.
Thank you.
So Mike, is this a counter to ours? Is this like the next step or is it parallel?
This is just it, yeah. I just wanted to compare them side by side for a minute so that as we go through this, there isn't some confusion, you know. So what we have, what we have in this article is not a response to the issues you spoke to in the first part of this, because this is what we prepared before we came in here. So we wanted to clarify what we have required in part. I'm going to take you to 11.2d, where it says faculty are required to submit other exemplars of teaching quality. Now, what we're willing to do is, if you think that there is a suggestion with this language that people have no limit or direction as to what we consider to be the indicators that should be addressed in that area, and we're willing to take out the such as and the list of some of the indicators and leave the indicators be what is contained in the tenure and promotion guidelines. But we'll be down to the classroom observation, which is the other issue that you raised. We have proposed some language to draw a distinction between the two-week notice would be in place for classroom observation for key purposes of evaluation and the annual evaluation, as opposed to, you use the word investigation, we have undertaken for other purposes, but then we have provided examples that would be triggering an investigation. So I think we're getting close there, because that's kind of what we sort of have in mind, is that it would be a complaint or a concern that was raised that would require us to go into a classroom.
So you're saying, if I'm reading this correctly, that the two-week window can be violated specifically for conducting annual evaluation material?
No. The two-week notice is applicable to an observation done for the purposes of evaluation.
Okay.
We don't think the two-week window ever applied to non-evaluative observations. The two-week window did not apply if there was some kind of emergency or some kind of need to go into a classroom and
would that be outside of well, okay, the two main components would be evaluation and investigation, right? And emergency, right? Okay. That's kind of the three-pronged steel.
Without waiting to the word investigation, because I have to think about that.
Right.
One is evaluation, and one is the need to take some responsive action.
Okay.
To obtain information about what actually is going on. You know, it's interesting because there's a matter going on right now. It's not a matter that's being represented by the United Faculty of Florida. It's a faculty member's not having UFF representation, private representation. But he was non-renewed, and the allegation is that in his last semester, he went in and said to his classes, you're going to have a graduate assistant teach out. And somehow that came to the attention of an associate dean through a conversation with one of the graduate assistants. Because what he was doing wasn't even using the graduate assistants in the classroom that they were assigned. He was actually, pulling them off other projects and sending them in. And one of the students came and said, it's okay, I don't want to get in trouble for this, because I'm not doing what's on my contract, I'm doing what I'm being told by this faculty member. And the dean went into the classroom, and there's a teaching assistant in front of the classroom, and he observed the class. And then afterwards had a conversation with the teaching assistant and said, what's going on here? And he said, I've been sent in to teach out this class. So, I mean, those kinds of things happen. I mean, he gives 2 weeks notice, and then the guy will say, oh, well, let's go back to my classroom that day.
Yeah, you mentioned that scenario last time, so that's when I was looking through the contracts, and that they were framing it in an investigative language.
Yeah, that was investigative.
And that was investigative, but I was thinking of that situation specifically because the other contracts have the equivalent of like probable cause warrants, right? Like that's a broadly probable cause situation, right? Like you receive probable cause of why you should go in there, right? And in the other contracts, they have to go and get the whoever goes into that classroom has to get approval from a higher up. It's essentially like a warrant situation where you have to go and the provost or president or representative gives you permission to then take that step of.
Yeah, I have to think about that too because, like in this particular situation, I mean the I don't know, but it was in the dean's office. It wasn't the dean, but the dean has the conversation with the graduate assistant. He looks up and says, "The next class is tomorrow morning at 9:00. I'm walking into that class tomorrow morning at 9:00. You know, it's not like I don't know if you have approval where that floats down. I don't. Is at that particular university, is that person going to track down the provost to say, I got to go in tomorrow morning at 9:00? I don't know if that.
Well, it's more representative. It's not necessarily the specific provost. But,
well, I'll have to think about that. So going through this, I think issue is on page 4, where I looked at your language, and I think we're rather in agreement or we're close to it, which is, when you exercise a one-time, one-year postponement, you follow a six-year schedule from the one-year postponement.
We accepted that change. Just saying that it would just be
right, and we're still apart on the drop language. I think that I'll tell you. I think that we might talk about at some point when someone's in drop or faced retirement, they would no longer have to do it. But you know, we're kind of concerned that let's say somebody hasn't had an SPE for 6 years and they go into drop in their SPE year, you know, they'll run 11 years without one. Mm-hmm. So what do you have to think about
Yeah, that's one of the changes we made to that. Initially, we had proposed that that it would be at the faculty member's discretion, right? Mm-hmm. Now we changed that in our counter proposal here, and we said they just would not receive one, right? So you would not have the option of receiving one, right? And the reason is we think that that's a benefit to the university to plan towards retirement, right? You know, to have that, and also if someone's in drop, the whole process of doing an SPE is not terribly beneficial for anyone, right? Let's assume it's a scenario where someone's going to get a tier 3, right, mm-hmm. bond period. So they go through SPE, that takes time, it's reviewed, and then they get a performance improvement plan. Okay, well, they get their performance improvement plan, and then by the time they complete that, it's 3 years, right, or however long, and they're already retired.
Well, yeah, that's why we were thinking about maybe having, we're conceiving of maybe a date and drop. It doesn't make any sense for them to go through the process because you're so close to your retirement date. But also, I think, unless the law has changed since the last time I've run into it, you can undrop. Yeah. So somebody could aggressively avoid an SPE by dropping and then undropping and dropping and undropping.
One of the things I thought about, if that's a concern, first of all, I don't know the exact state of the law on that, right?
I know a person who undropped the day before their drop date.
But then they have to pay back, right? They pay back into it. So I could imagine, like you're right, we don't want to have a situation where somebody is pulling an undrop like multiple times, right? So I could imagine if there's a scenario where someone is trying to use drop to do that, you would include language basically that said, like, if they undrop, right, and pay it back, then they immediately receive an SPE, and it goes back, and they're evaluated on those 6 years that mm-hmm. they, you know. There could be things that accommodate.
Again, maybe going to a date, a date from retirement might help us alleviate that concern, because if you're if you have an SPE coming up and you go into drop and you're in drop for like 3 years, you're probably not gonna drop just to avoid an SPE. That's just our thoughts on that.
And we could also look at like a window of like if you have it, if you're at least 2 years out from an SPE, right? So you're not triggering DOP the minute before you go for a scheduled SPE, right?
Okay.
We're flexible on those things.
Okay. On page 5, we're in agreement on the handling of a faculty member who's up for promotion and SPE simultaneously. We are in agreement, I think, in terms of our intent that we should clarify that the application be for the 6 years corresponding to the SPE period as opposed to going back to the beginning of time.
And don't define it next to, I just pulled in the current tenure and promotion, but just say just the 6 years.
We're apart on who recommends the tier. Mm-hmm. We have the, in our language still, that the...
Yours is unchanged from last time.
I think our language is different, but I think it does the same thing. Okay. We just sort of clarified it because it's a language change, but it's not a substance change.
Do you want to keep going or do you need a couple thoughts?
Go ahead, sure.
The problem with differentiating those tiers, only allowing the dean to define tier, or disallowing the college personnel committees and the department chair to recommend a tier, is that it's almost impossible to provide a recommendation and an evaluation without implicitly recommending a tier. Right? Because as you're evaluating whether or not someone has met or exceeded that criteria, that tier rating is very much tied to the language, right? A tier one is clearly exceeds tenure criteria. Tier two is has met tenure criteria, and tier three is failed to meet, does not satisfy tenure criteria. So if I'm writing an evaluation and I'm saying, okay, this person published 8 in the end, he's only required to publish 5, you know, he's clearly exceeding this the path, he's done extraordinary work, he's, you know, that's implicitly recommending a tier. That's tier one, and he's clearly exceeded it. And it's gonna potentially set up grievance situations where you have faculty who are saying, you know, that the grieving process, you're much more likely to get grievances over process where you're putting restrictions on what someone can or cannot say in their evaluation, in the evaluation process, rather than allowing each group to have a simultaneous and independent evaluation.
And I think the only other change is on page 6, where we have added that if a person is unsuccessful and they are put on a performance improvement plan and then they successfully complete it, as long as they can do that within 1 year from the commencement of the performance improvement plan, that the they would receive a $1,000 salary increase.
Okay.
And then I think everything else is status quo.
I have a thought about that. A 1 year window is insufficient, especially if you're trying to deal with the research team. I mean, it's to say, yes, we want you to have an article in print, for example, with 1 year. You'll never make that, because even if you had this miraculous article that you pulled out of the air, got it accepted, and it sits there in the publication queue for 18 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, this truly underestimates the length of time some disciplines have in creating scholarly work.
Well, if you want to count on something, we'll certainly consider it.
Okay. Well, the performance improvement plan already has its own timeline in it, right? It has to define a definitive timeline. So I think if you say it's completion, that's going to have an inherent timeline in it. Actually, teaching would be the harder one, because you're not going to get teaching evaluations for, you know, another year or two. In a performance improvement plan, it might be a multi-year teaching. But yeah, we'll count that. What about, I'm looking here at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
After that, one of the things we discussed, the way we said, I think you, it's just not underlined here or red. We had proposed that you would, when someone completes a performance improvement plan, this is our counter proposal, that they would, it would be 6 years from the completion of the performance improvement plan. Initially, we said they would have the choice of whether or not it would be from the original. Our counter said, once you complete that performance improvement plan, that starts the new 6 year clock. And so it looks like there's, this language is not, I don't think this language is status quo language. Right before 11.4 criteria. Oh, yeah, you're saying the dean will designate in writing if the faculty member's next SPE will remain on the original SPE schedule, a 4 or 6 year schedule.
Yeah.
Beginning with the academic year following the performance improvement plan. That's a new proposal. Are you saying the dean will decide whether or not the person gets a new 6 year plan?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
What does that S mean?
That's just a title. But that's not status quo language at the bottom. That's new.
I think that's your language from last time.
That's part of our dean. But it was underlined in ours, but we had proposed the faculty member will decide, right?
Right, and that's why it went right into and will, because it was the faculty member.
So
it should be underlined.
Our counter was just simply, I think it makes more sense. I don't think we want somebody else deciding, you know, the dean deciding if their next plan is going to be a 6 year or a 3 year or something like that, SPE. I think it makes more sense that it would just be a 6 year, they would start a new clock from the completion of the performance improvement plan.
Okay. And so the way, let's say a performance improvement plan is 2 years or 3 years, mm-hmm. then it would be 8 or 9 years to the next one. Is that not, am I understanding that correctly?
The language that we have says, upon successful completion of performance improvement plan, the faculty member will receive a tier two salary increase. You guys are proposing $1,000 instead of tier two, right?
Yeah.
Then the faculty member's next SPE will follow a new 6 year schedule beginning with the academic year following the academic year of completion of the performance improvement plan. Right?
Okay.
You know, so that way there's no years of duplicate work, right? Like the if the performance improvement plan takes 2 years, then they complete it. That closes off that section. They get whatever increase that they get at that point. And then they have another 6 years, okay. Clean slate for the next.
All right. Now, just in terms of process, I know we came in today with dueling Article 11s. Are you going to counter this one?
We'll write up the next one.
Okay. All right. Good. Do you have something else for us to consider?
Yes. We have... this is back to Article 3, the UFF privileges zone.
Uh-huh.
We've talked about in Article 3 in the past, just different components. As I was mentioning, I was just saying a minute ago about trying to define really the problem is that we're looking at. We've been trying to draw, we've talked about it a little bit the last few years, the language where we have on our side this limitation of four years of receiving a course release, a limitation. And then if you get a release time, some release time for doing our UFF work, for four consecutive years, you cannot receive additional course release for 2 years after. And so, the problem on our end is that creates an inequity between the teams, right? And it essentially forces people either to work without compensation or to be forced out. Now, as someone who's coming to the end of that four-year term, you guys might appreciate a new phase in here. But the position that you guys have said previously, if I'm saying it correctly, there's also a challenge on your end in the departments and the FTEs, and that a department, you know, if someone stays in a position in perpetuity, a department is going to take an unfair hit on their FTEs over time.
Mm-hmm.
So we think we found a way a proposal to address that.
There's a stipend instead of release.
Yeah, that you essentially that you would at any point, you could choose a stipend rather than release. And if you choose a stipend, you forfeit that unit of release time. We propose that the stipend is calculated at 8.5% of the salary, faculty member salary. Where that 8.5% comes from is, for the summer stipend, it's a 0.25%. It's a 0.25 FTE for that calculation. For the summer stipend, in the you can't just say 0.25 FTE in the academic year, though, because we're already at 1.0 FTE. So the stipend has to be calculated as a flat amount or a percentage. So that's where that comes from. And we're also, and that's the only change in addition to that on here is, okay, of course, like the four-year limitation would not be subject to the stipend. If you receive a stipend, that's not subject to the four-year limitation. So you can do 4 years course release and switch to a stipend replacement instead.
Okay.
And we have also proposed increasing the summer from one total unit to two total units for faculty members in the summer. It seems inescapable and possible for us, you know, because of many factors, but all primarily because of the legislature and others, that we're working through the summer. As we've done the last few years, and clearly we'll be doing that this summer as well. So we've proposed two total releases for the work we have to do with between Green as president and negotiations over the summer.
Okay. I think we understand that, what your proposal is. Does anybody have any questions? Okay. The other thing is that we're going to put on the table today is, and it's a reprise of what I think we put on the table before. And first, I'll talk about what our interest is, and feel free to jump in. Our interest is that we want to have the practice of someone who goes from an annual leave earning position to a non-annual leave earning position, and a cash out as a result of that happening once as an active employee. And then after that, if they do it again, that they would have to wait till they receive that benefit as a terminal benefit. So that's really kind of what we're after, and that's our intent. So
we changed some of this previously.
Yeah, I know. Whenever it comes to language on leave, it's kind of, sometimes you read it and wonder what is really going on here. That's what's really going on with our articulation. So, however we get to that. I've only given you a part of 1912, not the entirety of it, because that's the only area right now that we have a proposed change. We'll take a look.
I can talk. I remember a lot of our conversations on this. We don't need a copy. If you guys need a copy, you're welcome.
No, go ahead. I can talk about that. Go ahead, please.
I know when we talked about that annual transition before. I remember I looked into this as well. The way it stands now, right? When you transition out of annual leave, right? You can take that buyout at that. You're required to take that buyout, right? In our status quo language.
I don't know. I think you can take it or defer it.
It was because the problem really needed. If you remember, we had a problem where we changed some language at one point. Yeah. And didn't change.
We agreed to a change maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That we agreed to the change that was in number one, and we forgot to cross out number two.
Yeah, yeah. And we just picked it up.
So this time we are making sure we cross out number two.
Yeah.
And we took out some stuff in number one that we didn't need.
I think it's okay.
So the way in the language about only being able to take it one time, right? I think that our concern in the proposal was, I think it was initially written where you could, if someone moves from annual leave to non-annual leave earning, they wouldn't actually receive that payout until they retired. That's the way it was written previously, right? And that causes a depreciation problem, right? Because if you're transitioning now and you have 20 years, some people will move from a department, someone's 45 years old and they're department chair, right? And then they move back into unit. right? Let's say they buy it up 20 grand, they don't retire for 20 years, and then they get 20 grand, they've lost, you know, all the earning power on that 20 grand over that time.
Mm-hmm. Except that money might also appreciate by other means.
But what other, I think, if I remember right, the language said at the time,
oh, it's paid out at the time of...
It's calculated, but then paid out later, right? Okay. So that's our main concern, right? Okay. Is that you would want to... Because right now you receive a payout, right? But then you have to pay it back in. Or what? Before we did it last time, you would receive the payout when you transitioned, and then you would have to pay it back if you went back into a position. So it's like a 0% loan, basically. We'll look over this real quickly. I guess we will take a caucus. And then, is there anything else that you have? Yeah, good. Go ahead.
Not so much. Just a quick sales pitch on the UFF. You know, we are trying to change. We have changed the culture from our union, but we're going to need time to develop our bench because it could very easily go back to the way it used to be. If you follow my, I probably should have gone off the record, but you follow what I'm saying here. My point is we see ourselves as part of shared governance and not natural adversaries. And that's, we're trying to change that. Oh, we are. But, you know, give us the time to develop the bench so this will carry on beyond us.
Here's the language because it says, upon separation from the university shall pay the faculty member for up to 325 hours of unused leave at the hourly rate the faculty member was earning as of the last day of work in the annual leave accruing position.
Right.
So if someone is a department chair, they're earning annual leave, they transition at 40 years old, right? You know, and then they back to in unit. Mm-hmm. When they retire, they're still paid at that rate, at the moment of separation, they're paid at the rate from 30 years ago. You know, and so I think that's a problem. It would be a better situation if they were just paid out at the time.
Well, our proposal is that they can have one transition with a payout.
Okay, so are you proposing though that they would receive the payout, that they would have the option of receiving the payout at that moment of transition, and then they would no longer be able to? That's what we're saying.
It's deferred till their termination.
Yeah. Okay. Paid at a rate of potentially 25 years ago.
Okay. That's what I said. I said you read lead language.
Yeah. Make your head spin.
Yeah, cross-eyed. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we have nothing else. Do you want a caucus?
Isn't that what we're doing now? Did I misunderstand?
I got everything I needed from the caucus just there. When Daniel was talking,
I guess we're done.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Did you guys have anything else on instructor lecture promotions or any thoughts? Is that previously you said that the university is interested in that and negotiating that? Has that position changed? Are they still interested in that?
Yeah, we're still interested in negotiating that, but we just don't have anything today for that. I think we understand the issues where we're not in agreement on Article 11. I think we understand the request for the changes in Article 3. So maybe we don't need a caucus because I don't think we're going to come back with anything today on those. And we'll look forward to your Article 11 in the future. And
so we're not doing a duplicate thing. We'll write a response to 11 and this leaves article.
Yeah.
If you guys write a response to 3.
Yeah, 3 is not with us. So okay. the next iteration of 3 will be from us.
Okay.
Good. All right, everyone. That's it. Right, thanks.
Have a safe trip.
Always.
Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, safe trip back.